Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 2:45 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is October 26th. Well, the 10-year minus the 3-month yield curve spread went inverted for a brief moment in here today and finished up about 2 basis points. But this has been an incredibly quick compression. Just cast your minds back to May of this year. And Jay Powell was saying, look at the 10-year minus the 3 months yield curve spread. This doesn't suggest that there's any risk of a recession. But of course, since then, it has compressed by more than 225 basis points. So that's an incredibly swift compression. But one thing that they weren't really willing to talk about was this huge divergence between the 10-year minus the 3 month and the 10-year minus the 2 year. Because back in May of this year, the latter spread was at 26 basis points, not 226. And it's now sharply inverted at a negative 40 basis points, which is, give or take, about as inverted as it has been at any point, including back in 2000 or all the way back in 1989 or 82. So it was easy enough to figure out why there was such a big divergence. It's because there was abject panic in the bond markets. So the 3 month yield is up to 4%. It's fully priced in the potential for a 75 basis point hike next week. So that's pretty clear. The Federal Reserve is likely to raise by 75 basis points next week. And then will they continue after that? Well, there was a bit of back and forth trading around that idea in here today because the Bank of Canada decided they were going to raise by 50 basis points instead of 75. Well, a good part of the reason for that is Canada has been enjoying a property bubble for most of the last decade, and prices have gone to extraordinary levels, particularly relative to average income, and therefore the central bank in Canada has to be a lot more cautious about raising rates than the Federal Reserve does, since most mortgages in the US are fixed rate. Now, what happened with the 3 month was it was artificially depressed because yields on the long end were ramping higher in response to inflation. So anyone who could did sell, and they then parked their money in the repo market, and there's upwards of 2.5 trillion sitting in repo, or if they couldn't sell out of fixed income entirely, then they had to go exceptionally short dated. So that depressed yields at the short end of the curve, rose yields at the long end of the curve, and contributed to that widespread between the very long and the very short ends of the curve in preference to just the 10-year minus the 2-year. But the reason that it has pulled back and now gone to an inverted condition is because the Fed funds rate has been going up so fast. So 75 basis points on multiple occasions since May, well, then that has very smartly brought down the divergence. And certainly the big question now is what's going to happen at the long end of the curve? So the 10-year yield is down to 4%, and this is the upper side of the underlying range. If we're going to have a recession, then that would imply that we're going to have a deflationary shock. And that would be good news in that it would help to control some of the inflationary pressures that are linked to demand. It's not going to have much of an effect on supply, but from the US perspective, the majority of the inflation has been demand driven. A lot of the supply issues have taken care of themselves. There is no longer a shortage of truckers. In fact, there is a surfeit of truckers. There's no longer a queue of ships at Los Angeles port that's been worked out. And then there's this significant inventory build, and that's being sold down. So the supply issues are not nearly as pressing now as they were a year or even 2 years ago. But the demand is still in the economy. Now, I've seen lots of evidence of this demand. I thought that it was really interesting that the manager of a commodity CTA fund was speaking at the conference I was at yesterday, and he was saying that there are more commodities in backwardation this year than ever before. But that's just another example of how demand for absolutely everything has gone through the roof. And we're not going to get in control of inflation until that demand starts coming back down. That's what the Federal Reserve is trying to do. Now, if we can think then, how do you measure that, or the success of that? Well, the 10-year yield would be a measure of success. If inflationary pressures and the expectation for inflation starts to wane, then we will see yields compressing. But then the bigger question is, will the correlation between the rising yield and the weakness in the stock market remain? Or will yields compress and then subsequently equities do worse? That's, I think, perhaps now what we're going to see. So let's look at, for example, Amazon. Amazon has businesses that are in two of the important sectors with regard to demand. On the one hand, it has this massive online shopping sector. So that's obviously been a beneficiary of consumer demand, and the share going down suggests that consumer demand is not as powerful as it was. And then they also have their Amazon Web Services, which is basically a play on cloud. And cloud was all the rage in 2020, 2021. And reality struck in 2022 that anyone who wanted to go for the cloud has already done so. And the big surge in demand from the pandemic just pulled forward sales from far in the future. So there's ample scope for additional downside. But the other big issue now for Amazon is that they have also become a significant advertiser. So that's been growing leaps and bounds in terms of their revenue over the last few years. They didn't have any advertising in 2020, in 2018. It was $12 billion in 2019, $19 billion in 2020, and $31 billion in 2021. So they can also look here at how much money they're charging their sellers. It's gone from $50 to $100 billion. And on top of that, you have another $30 billion in advertising. And this also means that consumers, they're no longer getting the best product at the top of the list, but rather they're looking at products that have been paid for advertising, which means that there's not as much faith in the ranking on Amazon as there used to be. But what's also been very clear is that returns are rising. So what people are doing is buying the product, using it for a while, then returning it, and availing of the free returns. So sales remain high, but then returns eat into profitability. And that would suggest that Amazon's earnings tomorrow, after the bell tomorrow, are going to surprise on the downside. And we've also seen that other types of subscription business, like Google and Microsoft, are also weaker in here today. This was a significant disappointment for Google, and they saw revenue from YouTube declining, and that's a first. So this was a big dynamic move off the open in here today, and it finished on the lower side of the range. So this is not bullish. We're seeing earnings for the mega cap companies disappointing. And Microsoft was also in negative territory. Both of these companies have adopted subscription business models, most particularly Microsoft, and now the share is trending lower. I should, of course, exhibit some self-awareness, and I just want to thank my subscribers for remaining steadfast, because this service would not exist without the support of subscribers. And we're in an inflationary period. So one of the things that people are doing is they're sitting down, they're looking at their budget, and they're looking at everything they spend money on in terms of subscriptions, and they're cutting what is unnecessary. So then that's also going to feed through into things like the cybersecurity. And this ETF is also trending downwards. And it could easily see now that the 200-day could cross down through the 1,000-day moving average. So that's where some of the negatives are. Now, what we've also seen in here is that the solar sector rebounded really quite impressively over the last 2 days. And this was, or at least it is working on an upside weekly key reversal from the region of the 1,000-day moving average. Now, it's going to have to hold it through the balance of the week, and I suspect we're going to get a good deal of volatility between now and the end of the week, because we have Amazon earnings after the close tomorrow, and then Apple having rebounded really quite impressively over the course of the last 2 weeks. Well, then we're also going to have their earnings after the close tomorrow as well. So there is certainly scope for a good deal of volatility. And that is before we get to the Fed funds meeting next week, the 2nd of November. We've had a short covering rally, and some sectors are starting to gain more attention. And certainly, we're seeing companies that are willing to sign 3 and 5 year offtake agreements with copper companies. So that's basically hedging their downside. So Southern Copper was in positive territory today, and it's coming back up towards the upper side of this 4 month base formation. And copper prices are still holding within this range. But we're up in a dynamic manner in here today. There was certainly evidence of some support coming through for the renminbi today. This is the biggest dynamic move we've seen in quite some time. Then we can think about the Japanese yen, where we've had a couple of efforts to try and support the currency, and it was also in positive territory today. The pound is back above the 1.15 area and pushing up out of this little range in here today. And the euro is back in the region of parity and finishing on the upper side of the range. Now, when we look at the dollar index, then it's back below the 110 level. And this is now breaking the sequence of higher reaction lows. So, any strength in the bond market, which is pricing in a recession and deflation, then what it is doing, it is detracting from the argument that of U.S. exceptionalism, and therefore the strength of the dollar is the greatest example of that exceptionalism. So the dollar can pull back. It's very overbought. We could easily see it coming back into the region of the 200-day moving average. And if it continues to push lower from here, that's beneficial for gold. We've had two upside key reversals in the last month, and it was up $11 in here today, but not quite able to hold all of the move. And silver was also in positive territory, but also not quite able to hold all of the move on the upside. And gold shares have lost downward momentum and are firming up towards the upper side of this very short-term range. if the dollar breaks its uptrend, then that's going to be beneficial for gold. The higher interest rate environment and the strength of the dollar have been the biggest headwinds for gold all this year. We can think about the fact that we had the big downward dynamic in April of this year. The Federal Reserve started aggressively raising rates just after, and prices have been under pressure since then. So what we are now starting to look at is potentially a more classic environment where bonds start to offer a hedge against a deflationary environment and a recession, and that equities start to exhibit some downward pressure. Now, we've also seen that high yield spreads have started to contract somewhat. When the spread is at 537 basis points and the yield's 4%, well, then you're getting a 900 basis point return, a 900 basis point return. So we would need to see stress in the corporate sector in order to see these spreads push higher from here. It's not at all, I guess it's quite likely. I don't want to go through double negatives. It's quite likely that we are going to see stress, particularly in the commercial property markets, where cap rates are pretty similar to high yield bonds. But high yield bonds have an implied default rate, and commercial property doesn't because there was a moratorium on bankruptcies. So that suggests then that we are going to see yields moving higher. But there are isolated cases where we're going to see some questioning. For example, we've seen, for example, that Paramount has had a bond. Now, obviously, these kinds of media bonds, they're not the same. They don't offer the same kind of predictability that you get elsewhere. But the 2042, 4.5 is yielding 8.25%. So that's been a really quite considerable move on the upside. And it's not like we have clear downward pressure on some of these companies, but there are going to be, it doesn't necessarily mean that these are clear buying opportunities right away, but they are examples of just how much yields have gone up already. And then Discovery is another high yield bond with a coupon of 6 1/3 is up to nearly 8% on the yield. So there are plenty of examples here. Now, Southern Copper has a yield of 4%, and it's got a higher rating than Freeport-McMoRan, and the share is steadying. So there's certainly the potential here that copper is going to steady up, that any effort to support the currency in China and the economy will be beneficial for copper. The weakness is entirely copper related. The willingness to sign these long-term offtake agreements is about securing supply. So we have the long-term demand story, but we have short-term uncertainties, and all of those short-term uncertainties relate to China. So when we think about the CSI 300, it's been trending downwards all year. Now, we had a little bit steadier action in here today, but it did not hold. One thing that I think is really notable is every time we see less impressive performance by the large cap companies that are in the US, then on those same days, we see that it is Chinese large cap companies are the best performers. So this has obviously been priced into some of the algorithms. So Pinduoduo was up 11% in here today, and it's also been weak, and it's the bouncing from the lows that were put in back in August. So it's not like all of these companies are accelerating lower. And that doesn't mean that there isn't uncertainty. But certainly, what I find interesting is that there's money that's flowing between the two asset classes. That when Chinese companies are weak, then money starts to flow back into the large caps in the US, and then vice versa. But that doesn't suggest that this money is going to stick around. Then let's think about the oil price. It was up $2.35 in here today. And this is a higher reaction low. So it is now bouncing from the $90 area. It has not yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs. And it has been jolly volatile. Every time it's looked like it's going to go up, it pulled back. Every time it's pulled back and looked like it was going to go lower, it has bounced. So it's going to have to at least sustain the move through $100 to break the sequence of lower rally highs, but certainly this action is more positive. And of course, a weaker dollar is beneficial for just about all commodities. And a strong performance by commodities is very indicative of late stage activity in the stock market. So, the best performing sector in the USA over the last 2 years has been energy, and it's still strong. And the healthcare sector is, and particularly the pharmaceutical sector, is still performing reasonably well as well. Now, they're not going to be immune from a recession, but usually, when they roll over, it's the last sectors. They're the last sectors that roll over because they're the most defensive. And the Dividend Aristocrats have also rebounded in here today. So coming back up into the region of the 200-day moving average, this is the first area of potential resistance. Something that I'm thinking about is that investors appear to be favoring the kinds of companies that have got a really strong record of dividend growth. So Visa came through with stronger than expected earnings in here today, and the share rebounded in an emphatic fashion. MasterCard took its cue from Visa and also rallied rather impressively. Then some of the I guess the leaders in engineering also firmed in here today. So Roper Technologies has a very respectable dividend growth policy, double-digit growth. Now, the actual yield is only 0.2%. So people aren't buying it for the yield, but they're buying it for the dividend growth. And Thermo Fisher has also been quite weak, and it was in negative territory in here today, but it also has this impressive dividend growth rate. So these kinds of companies can pull back, but they are the kinds of companies that people will buy first when the shooting stops because of that high dividend growth rate. If you can capture a high nominal yield and then let it grow at double digits while you hold the share, well, it doesn't really matter what happens in terms of the share price after that because you're getting a higher dividend payment every year. Now, obviously, the point at which it is bought is going to be key to how well that kind of investment plays out over the long term. But we are starting to see some willingness to take these kinds of risks. I think it is a bit early to go all in, but some judicious value buys are probably justified at this stage. And it is, I think, quite interesting that the alternative energy sector, led by the copper companies, but even some of the beaten down companies like Volta, which is attempting to pioneer a charging network with advertising screens. They really want to try and use advertising revenue to provide free charging for automobiles. And the share has collapsed, but it's steadying. And it was up 6 on a dollar share in here today. So even here, we're starting to see a little bit of interest coming through in what was a surprisingly negative day for the mega cap companies. So the epicenter of risk is financial engineering, most particularly the kinds of companies that benefited most from the global liquidity easy environment that we've had for 14 years, and those that took the biggest risks from it. And ultimately, some of the companies that listed over the last few years will be successful, and others will not. But we certainly have a refocus of attention on energy. And regardless of what happens, the geopolitical imperative is for national security on the energy front. And that is bullish in terms of energy infrastructure everywhere. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.